Hello, it's Friday, August 4th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing Radio.
And today, Wing TV and Sisyphus Press is very proud to announce the release of the most dangerous 9/11 book ever written, Victor Thorne's new release, 9/11 Evil, Israel's Central Role in the September 11th, 2001 Terrorist Attacks.
And as we said yesterday, we're very excited to get this book out there for everybody to take a look at.
Especially right before the 5th anniversary of 9/11.
Exactly. And we put this book up mid-evening last night, and already today my inbox is filled with orders, so I want to thank everyone. I haven't even had a chance to take a look yet at what's in there, but I can see a lot of people are taking a look at this, so I'm going to get as many out in the mail as I can today. I guarantee everything that comes in this weekend will go out by Monday, and we're just very, very excited to get this information out there. And really, Lisa, what we have to look at now is, do people want reality, or do they want to live in a world of illusion? And last night we got a phone call from an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And we've spoken to him quite a number of times in the past.
He's a regular Wing TV listener.
Right. So our intention right now isn't to make fun of him or to criticize him. But what he was saying was very indicative of what a lot of people, I think, in this day and age feel, is that they'd rather have any kind of hope, even if it's a false hope, than to face reality square in the face. And
over time, this person, and he's not the only one.
Mm-hmm.
There have been many people who've asked us about one group or another, one individual or another. Is this group for real? They say they're going to do this, and they're going to thwart this whole situation and the impending doom and so on. And time after time, we point out, if it's too good to be, if it looks like it's too good to be true, it generally is. It typically is. And what it boils down to is people keep looking to the horizon for heroes to ride up on their white stallions and rescue everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, coming to the realization that we have to be the heroes. We have to stop looking for heroes on the horizon. The heroes are going to have to be people like us, people of conscience.
Well, and let me put it like this. This individual called a few months ago, or maybe it was even a year ago, and his big hope at that time was Carl Schwartz. Carl Schwartz running for president. He was going to save the world. Then the bottom dropped out, and he became disillusioned with Carl Schwartz. Then it was the Democrats. We have to get the Democrats in office because they're going to save the world. But I think he kind of sees now that the Democrats aren't the answer. Well, yesterday when this individual called,
I don't know,
his new big hope is Nisara. And he was saying, well, have you ever heard of the White Knights? And have you ever heard of Dove? And I was like, yeah, we've heard about this stuff for 3 or 4 years now. And there's no, and so we're like, we don't believe it. We don't buy it.
Supposedly there are 250,000 sworn Navy SEALs who are going to rescue us all from this whole gloom and doom destructo situation next month. Now, why would they announce that to the public a month ahead of time or even longer ahead of time if they really intended to do that? And how do you know for sure there's all these Navy SEALs? I mean, just because somebody tells you?
Yeah, just because they said it. And what it's like is chasing windmills.
Well, it's hoping against hope that something short of a miracle or an act of God is going to save us all. We have to be the ones. It's not going to be so easy to get ourselves out of this situation that's occurring, not only in America, but in the world. We're not going to have, it's not like a Hollywood movie where the hero rides up and saves the day.
Right. And this individual, after I said we didn't believe in Nisara, we've seen all their claims in the past, and we don't believe in,
well, they're not doing anything.
Right. We don't believe in people with names like Dove or the White Knights, and it sounded like, you know, comic book heroes like the Ghost Troops that are saving the world from imminent nuclear attacks and so forth. And finally, he's like, well, if you can't put your hope in them, who can you put your hope in?
You have to put your hope in the truth and in yourself and your conscience. and your ability to tell the truth. I mean, really, that's our best and only weapon right now.
Yeah. And he says, well, you have to believe in something then. And so I thought about this today, and what I believe in is reality. We have to believe in the reality of the situation. We can't sit here
and kid ourselves.
Yeah, and kid ourselves and believe something just because it triggers some dopamine in our brains and makes us feel good
for
20 minutes.
Because the reality is so unbearable to confront.
Yeah.
Head on, squarely, face to face, eyeball to eyeball. It's so unbearable for so many people to look at. They'll grasp onto any hope, whether it's based in reality or not, just so they can have a hope, something to believe in.
And it's like these.
And I feel badly about that.
Well, that's the thing that Lisa and myself both felt the worst about last night is that this guy is hoping for any kind of hope, something to put his faith in.
And look, we all feel that way. You know,
right.
Victor? I mean, we all feel that. We all want a miracle and an act of God or some hero to charge up on the horizon and save us from destruction.
But if I wanted that kind of mentality, then I would put my mind back into the frame it was when I was 4 years old.
Yeah, Santa
and
Claus.
I believe in Santa and the Tooth Fairy and Easter Bunny. And I would believe that our government and world government is out for our best. They have our best interests in mind. And it boils down to is I want reality regardless of how bitter and ugly and at points unbearable it is. Because Lisa and myself, late at night sometimes, we'll talk about this and we'll say, what the hell can we do about this? But I'd rather face these bitter realities than live in a fantasy world, to skip down the yellow brick road and try to find Oz somewhere at the end of the rainbow, because it doesn't exist that way.
Because, you know, as horrible as the truth is, there's still beauty in truth. It's still beautiful. The truth is beautiful. And so as unpleasant and harsh and bitter is a very good word for it, as bitter as the reality is, we have to look at it, because we can't fight it if we won't even look at it and admit that it exists.
And, you know, when you have individuals like Dove, who for 5 years haven't revealed their identity.
Well, and at one point, they even said that wasn't even the real Dove.
Yeah. Or the White Knights. Or the Ghost Troops. I mean, is this Marvel Comics where we're all living in some kind of a fantasy world where Rubberman...
Game.
Yeah, like Rubberman or Spider-Man or Superman are going to swoop down here and pick us up on their shoulder and fly us away? Or is it like the Brady Bunch, where after 26 minutes... everything happens,
and, you know,
turns out...
We understand the desperation.
Yeah.
We do understand. We feel it, too. And that's why it's all the more imperative that we all do what we can to spread this truth far and wide.
But see, that's what they all say. That's what all the other ones say. Spread the word. Spread the word. And then they say, well, we're at critical mass right now. We're ready to topple the New World Order. We're ready to knock them off their perch and take over.
We're not at critical mass.
But see, that's, again, what they say that they think you want to hear. And it's like a fat person that's all depressed that goes up to the grocery store and buys a couple candy bars and eats them because it releases some kind of chemical in their mind, and for 20 minutes they feel better. But is it a permanent fix?
No.
Is hearing what you want to hear or trying to believe in false hope going to make anything better?
Glad you brought that up, because that's what I said to the guy who called last night. I said, so basically, without any reason to believe in this group, you just want to believe in them because they're telling you things that you want to hear, as opposed to people who aren't telling you what you want to hear. And he admitted that that's so. I said, but the whole point is that you have to be able to hear what's real, and not just the things that are so palatable that go down easy for you, that sit well in your stomach, because you want to believe so desperately in them.
And see, Wayne TV isn't like a sweet-tasting medicine. What we come out here and do is we give you the bitter truths and bitter realities, and the medicine that we're feeding people doesn't a lot of times make them feel better. And this might disturb people, it might upset people, but guess what? We're hitting as close to reality as anybody out there in the world. And this is what we have to do. We have to face reality, not false hopes.
Right. And so, with that, I think we should start.
Well, first I want to bring up one other thing, which kind of ties into this book, 9/11 Evil, is yesterday up on Capitol Hill, Donald Rumsfeld was on the hot seat. And one of the people slinging arrows at him was Hillary Clinton.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And it was all the blame USA. But what I really wanted to talk about was that there was a substitute host today on one of these national talk shows. So this was a substitute propagandist for the regular propagandist.
Uh-huh.
And he was talking about 9/11. And he was saying, he was talking about polls and this and that. And, you know, and of course he was saying that these conspiracy theorists are all crazy, blah, blah, blah. And that America didn't do it. But then people would call in and say, you know, America was behind 9/11. This was an inside job. And I started thinking, Lisa, there's a mantra taking place. America did it. This was an inside job. And the more I think about it, 9/11 wasn't as much an inside job as it was an outside job. But what the alternative media, us included, have been doing for too long is only focusing on this small, tiny cabal within the U.S. government that was partially responsible for 9/11. We saw it all on the big C-SPAN symposium. It was Bush-Cheney,
right,
over and over and over and over and over again. The word Israel wasn't mentioned one time. And I was talking to Michael Collins Piper about it on the phone, I believe it was yesterday. And he didn't get a chance to see that show yet. But he says, I'll bet the word Israel wasn't mentioned once, was it? I says, not one time.
It wasn't on the script.
Yeah. So, here's the perspective that we have to look at this in. Why are we so willing to eat our own and blame our own? And believe me, I'm not being an apologist for this corrupt, evil, rotten government that we have right now. Bush and company. These neocons. I'm not an apologist for them. But why are we so willing, especially in the alternative media, to stop everything at Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and the neocons?
Well, the people who control the gatekeepers in both the mainstream and the alternative media hate what America symbolizes, what it stands for, and hate the non-psychopathic elements of our country, and want us to hate our country too.
But it finally dawned on me that by saying 9/11 was an inside job and stopping there,
well, it diverts all attention away from who else was involved.
Right. What this is doing is it's nothing but an extension of the mainstream media.
Right.
Because look at what's happened, Lisa. This outside foreign entity, Israel, and the Zionist New World Order that's pulling all the strings, they're the ones that planned and coordinated and had a large part in executing 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a foreign entity.
Right.
And we're not going to put our attention on them? How can that be? We're only going to eat our own. We're going to say, oh, it was Bush and Cheney. Well, Bush might not have known anything about the whole damn thing before it happened. I doubt that, but he played such a small role in 9/11. Yet when you go to these anti-war rallies or you look at the 9/11 sites, it's all Bush, George Bush, with the swastika on his face or the horns out of his head. And they act as if it goes no further than that. Well, 9/11 Evil, released today, gives an entirely different perspective on this matter. And I know you reread this book again this morning, Lisa. Give us your thoughts. Let's go into what's in this book.
Well, first of all, let's start off with what did not happen on 9/11. Okay? Number one, the World Trade Center towers did not collapse due to plane impacts or from fires caused by jet fuel. Now, that's already pretty well established. They, along with building number 7, collapsed due to controlled demolitions, which decimated all three structures. Number two, Flight 77 did not strike the Pentagon. Okay, now this is an area of extreme controversy and debate. We say it did not strike the Pentagon. An aerial projectile of some sort struck the Pentagon. The exit holes that we see in each successive ring of the Pentagon were caused by rapid wall breaching kits. And you can see Russell Pickering's website for that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we'll be putting that link up on our
it's
homepage
already up
if it's
on.
Not up there already.
Yeah.
Number three, Flight 93, or something purporting to be Flight 93, did not crash land in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. We established this with our book, the Flight 93 Shanksville Hoax.
Phantom Flight 93.
Right. It was brought down over Indian Lake, Pennsylvania, and made its fiery impact in New Baltimore, Pennsylvania.
And let me stop you right there for a second, Lisa, because this is such vital information.
Right.
Yet, there's not a damn person, or very few people, I should say, in the 9/11 movement that are even discussing Flight 93.
No.
There's a couple like Killtown and
uh-huh.
a few others. It's like Flight 93 in Shanksville didn't even happen.
Right.
And this is one of the biggest smoking guns
right.
there is.
Well, it's just like how Building 7 was never mentioned.
Yeah.
In the mainstream or by the 9/11 Commission.
Right.
It just didn't happen.
Yeah.
The crater that everybody saw in Shanksville was the result of a missile fired approximately 3 minutes after Flight 93 had been deliberately sabotaged and met its demise. Now, that's what didn't happen on 9/11. Okay?
One of the biggest things that the Zionist protection racket does, when they talk about 9/11, they'll say, oh, well, how was Israel able to do the military stand down? How are they responsible for doing that? Well, we don't have the time today to delve into this, but in this book, 9/11 Evil, we show how the Israel firsters were actually very capable and very responsible for ordering the Pentagon stand down, and it all leads to an entity called the Defense Policy Board. Anybody that thinks Donald Rumsfeld is the head honcho, the top of the control pyramid at the Pentagon, is sadly mistaken. And what they've done is these people that say, oh, Israel couldn't have ordered the stand down, they're giving you another mantra. They're giving you more brainwashing to make it appear as if there was no other entities outside of the U.S. government that were responsible for 9/11. And if you go to the Wing TV homepage and read this lead article, that's the first thing I put up there because it's the most vital point, that outside entities were capable of
right.
orchestrating this stand down.
There were some elements that had to be in place, which would have been necessary to be in place to pull off an event like 9/11. And I'm going to just go through them because there's only four or five.
Okay.
Bush had to be selected as president. That was number one.
Mm-hmm.
The Pentagon Defense Forces had to be commandeered by inside culprits, Israel firsters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The Pentagon had to be brought under the control of the perps, which it was.
Mm-hmm.
The World Trade Center towers needed to be purchased from New York City's Port Authority, and Larry Silverstein purchased it less than 2 months before 9/11. With a 99-year lease. As you know, Larry Silverstein made out like a fat rat after 9/11. Security at the specific airports and at the World Trade Center complex had to be controlled by the perps, which it was. And all standard protocol had to be eliminated with respect to the response to the so-called hijackings, and it was.
And what we do in this book now is show how all of this leads back to either Jewish or Israeli interests.
In fact, every single pivotal player
right.
involved in 9/11 is Jewish. It's kind of hard to, when it comes to the World Trade Center complex.
Well, when it comes to the sale of the complex, every single individual was Jewish. And if that doesn't throw up some red flags, I don't know what will. Now, there's so many other things in this book that we've gone over. And what we'd like to say is, this information has been available for a long time. The problem is, just like it was with the controlled demolition before 9/11 on trial came out, was that you see a little chunk here, you see a little chunk there, a little chunk here, and so forth, and there's no connection of the dots that's made. Well, with 9/11 on trial and now 9/11 evil, what's done is everything's brought together in one place. All the dots are connected, and you finally see this flow chart of sorts that shows how Israel played a very central role in the 9/11 terrorist attacks.
I mean, and it's operating on this Hegelian dialectic controlled chaos premise. You've got the thesis. You're either supporting us, supporting Israel's agenda, or the antithesis. You're with the terrorists, siding with the Muslim al-Qaeda enemy, which brings about the synthesis, which was...
Well, this reordering of the Middle East, these wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, now this expanded war with Israel's invasion of Lebanon. And I was talking to someone this morning, Lisa, and I said, you remember right after 9/11, the whole world grieved for America. The whole world wanted to console America. The whole world was behind America.
Right.
But then, George W. Bush, dangling from his puppet strings, comes out and issues his Israeli agenda declaration. You're either with us, or you're with the terrorists. And as Lisa said, it's all right there. You either support the Jewish-Israeli agenda to fight the Muslims, to fight Islam and the Arabs, or you're with the terrorists. You side with them. Well, immediately, you start seeing divisions, cracks in the veneer, and the whole world saying, wait a second. Who are you to lay down this ultimatum on us? We're not buying this Jewish agenda, this Israeli agenda. We're either with them or with the terrorists. And you see the Democrats against the Republicans. You see the European Union against America.
Christians versus Muslims.
Right, right, exactly.
And so on. There were many immediate after effects of 9/11. And I'd like to go through those if you'd like. Okay. First of all, a billion of Israel's enemies, the entire Muslim world, was instantly labeled terrorists, and they were placed in the crosshairs of our massive U.S. war machine. Okay? There was a vast increase in the Defense Department budget after 9/11. Dramatically increased government spending, thus higher deficits, and an escalation in borrowing from the Jewish-dominated international banking cartel. Then we saw Patriot Acts 1 and 2 emerge. The widespread Big Brother spying on foreign and domestic citizens that has caused such controversy. Perpetual war, which we are now currently engaged in. Lucrative payoffs to hand-picked defense contractors such as Halliburton, Lockheed, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, TRW, Bechtel, and General Dynamics. It gave the U.S. an excuse to invade in Afghanistan by saying that the al-Qaeda forces were trained in Afghanistan so the CIA could recapture the poppy heroin market.
And more importantly, all of this becomes known as Israel's war. This is what Israel has been itching for ages. But without an excuse, without this new Pearl Harbor, they weren't able to do it. And everyone in the anti-war movement wants to blame it on Bush and Cheney.
Right.
But this is Israel's war.
Let's get back to this. There was after 9/11, after effect, creation of widespread end-of-the-world type calamity which enveloped this country with fear, allowing our government to appear on the scene later as the knight in shining armor. Controlled chaos, which we talked about a few minutes ago, which operates on the premise of Hegelian dialectic. It polarized the nation by setting one faction of the political spectrum against another. It lessened individual rights, and it keeps people in fear of this police state, the police state mentality, which some in the alternative media like to hammer into your heads, like just with a roofing nail.
Well, it's like it's like Pavlov's dog.
Right.
A message gets pounded in.
Psychic driving.
Yes, so integrally that the individual becomes feeble. Becomes immobilized.
The populace has been so overwhelmed with so much ugliness that many people stick their heads in the sand to avoid the problem altogether. They can't confront it. It's too much. truth tellers have been marginalized, smeared, ridiculed, ostracized, excluded.
Well, and the perfect
and the worst, I think the most important thing we need to get to right now, I don't want to cut you off, but an increase in foreign aid to Israel to bolster mm-hmm. their war machine and further protect them from their perceived Muslim terrorists, which thus enables them to kill more people in Palestine and Lebanon.
Right. And Lisa made a perfect point when she says truth tellers are marginalized, ostracized, because Lisa found that out firsthand a week or so ago when she went into one of these 9/11 message boards or discussion rooms and started talking about how Israel, well, this is in reaction to a guy named Bill Douglas who said, anybody that talks about Israel's role in 9/11 is an anti-Semite, they're COINTELPRO, and then he says, everybody in this movement should tell the media not to pay attention to these people. So what you're doing is saying, with all of this evidence that's compiled in 9/11 evil, and if you read this article on the homepage, you'll see all the different ties. He's saying, ignore all this evidence, point only to Bush and Cheney, and if anybody goes beyond this, they even came up with a script that lets everybody know how they're allowed to talk about 9/11 in Israel and the things they're not allowed to say. So if you go beyond the script, then you get marginalized, and like Lisa, she got kicked out of the group because she wouldn't back down from them.
Well, the whole thing is, looking at our government, the U.S. government's official version of what happened on 9/11 led us to looking at Israel. Mm-hmm. We had to look at what our government said and who was involved and the individual players and entities involved in 9/11 from a U.S. standpoint first. Because it happened here, in our country. But that naturally tentacled out, and there's no avoiding Israel's involvement. And that's why when Alex Jones said on that symposium that he only goes into topics that aren't open for debate, that's really disingenuous and dishonest. Because there's nothing open to debate about Israel's involvement in 9/11. It's clearly well established. And many, many researchers have looked into 9/11 for years now, and they should be credited tremendously for all their hard work, especially the ones that came up with this, because this is such a taboo
right.
issue, yeah, and it's been the most excluded.
Yeah, and Jones on that symposium said at one point, or he asked, who benefits? And I thought right there, of course Alex is going to lay the hammer down and say, Israel benefited more than any other nation.
Benjamin, you thought he was going to say that?
Well, I'm saying that rhetorically. That's rhetorically. And even Benjamin Netanyahu,
uh-huh.
as you read in the book, Lisa, said how much it was going to favor Israel.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
But when Alex Jones said, who benefits? A complete vacuum. Not one single word
yeah.
about Israel.
Let's get into that, Victor.
And go ahead.
Benjamin Netanyahu was asked after 9/11 how the 9/11 tragedy would affect U.S.-Israeli relations. And he said, it's very good. And then he said, well, it's not very good, but it will generate immediate sympathy for Israel. Now, who the
yeah.
hell was thinking of Israel on the morning
right.
of 9/11?
Yeah, this is...
Was he looking down the road?
Well, of course. And I think they even, you know, just asked him, what are your reactions to this? And he says, well, this will generate immediate sympathy for Israel. And then he caught himself and had to rephrase it. But here's every single other person in the world.
Uh-huh.
They're shocked, horror-stricken, grieving, crying, filled with chaos in their mind, and here's Israel's former prime minister already plotting
right.
how it's going to benefit
well,
Israel. What a son of a bitch.
And if you look at who he was tied to,
yeah.
Larry Silverstein, who used to talk to Benjamin Netanyahu prior to 9/11 every Sunday afternoon on the phone. Silverstein is also closely tied to Ariel Sharon.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so many other links. I know we're running out of time here today, but we bring up Air Force One, an excellent passage
uh-huh.
about what happened on Air Force One on the morning of 9/11. Of course, the book couldn't be complete without the notorious Prince of Darkness, Richard Perle.
Right.
We reveal who George Bush's real guru is, and also how this famous PNAC document, the PNAC document, actually goes back to an Israeli Zionist hater. and his writings and how the neocons and the PNAC crowd picked up on this.
Right.
I mean, they're
going
so
to
damn
in
tight.
Dov Zakheim.
Oh, Jesus.
And
yeah.
Just, there's so much to list. We don't have time today, but we urge you. Check this out. This is, I think, the most taboo research available on 9/11. And I really hope that 9/11 victim families will check out the information in this book. We know that many of those families were essentially silenced by the Victim Compensation Fund hush money that they received, and this would explain a lot of the disinterested behavior on the part of these particular 9/11 families. And we urge all people out there who are concerned with the truth and finding answers to what happened on 9/11 and seeing why we are at the point we're at now to get this book.
I can say without any hesitation or doubt, 9/11 Evil is the most dangerous 9/11 book ever written.
Right.
This is reality. And as we close out today, remember, 9/11 was partially an inside job, but more so, 9/11 was an outside job. Our nation got attacked by an outside entity. Every finger points at the terrorist nation of Israel. And in this book, 9/11 Evil, you'll see this overwhelming amount of evidence that can no longer be denied, pointing directly to Israel.
Two hands of evil working together to pull off this major crime, this crime against humanity, because it isn't just a crime against the United States or American people. There are people all over the world that had their lives snuffed out by these perps on 9/11, and I'll be damned if we're going to sit by and say nothing about who else was involved in it. Israel was totally involved from A to Z.
And these two criminal entities that Lisa mentioned were Zionists outside our government and a small cabal of Zionists inside our government. 9/11 Evil is Israel and Zionism. And if you can't face it, then go back to 4 years old, go back to Santa Claus
and the Tooth Fairy,
and go back to putting your head in the sand, go back to watching Fox News and CNN, because this is the most brutal slap of reality there is right now, and it's all laid out. Either read it or weep, because that's really what it is.
Yeah. If you have a conscience, you can't avoid the truth. So check it out, and let us know what you think of it. And we are very, very excited. Victor, I'm really proud of you for compiling all this and putting it out there. And let's see what the rest of the 9/11 truth movement has to say about it.
Yeah.
I'm all ears.
Yeah, and we're going to touch upon that on Monday's show. The reaction now from the Patriot movement and the 9/11 truth movement. Let's see how much truth there is in this truth movement.
And how many truth tellers.
Or if they're going to do the same thing they did when 9/11 on trial came out. When they said, oh, no, we can't go into this controlled demolition because the American people aren't ready for the truth. Well, guess what? We know all of you listening to the show today are ready for the truth. The big question is the rest of the world? We'll be back on Monday. Until then, keep your eyes open because there is a lot going on.
Have a great weekend, everyone.